Welcome to GeekWire. We are live today in Renton, Washington. Hey, everybody. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
And I'm GeekWire podcast producer Claire McGrain.
We are, as we said, coming to you on the road this week as we explore Renton, Washington, just about 13 miles south of Seattle. This city is home to Boeing's 737 plant. The airplanes are right outside. We are here at Seco Development and at this wonderful project here, Southport. And a big thanks to Seco for sponsoring and underwriting our GeekWire on the road coverage this week in Renton. The view here is spectacular. I can't believe what it looks like just to look out across Lake Washington, see downtown Seattle. There, the skyline on the horizon.
Yeah, when we walked in, there was actually a pair of bald eagles kind of cavorting in the water, flying around. It was beautiful.
So a big thanks to everybody who's here. We've got a great show coming up. As we said, Southport is a new office campus located in Renton, and it's built to support the tech companies of tomorrow with next-generation infrastructure and easy access to transportation and housing. Southport is trying to attract new tech companies to this area, but Renton is actually already home to one very big and very geeky company, Wizards of the Coast, which is the company behind the games Dungeons & Dragons and Magic the Gathering. And we're excited to welcome Wizards of the Coast President Chris Cox to the GeekWire podcast as our first guest today. Chris, it's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
So for people who are familiar with D&D and with Magic the Gathering, they may not actually know much about Wizards of the Coast, which is the company that, as we said, makes those games. So when you kind of run into people and tell them what you do, what do you say? What is your job?
I think the easy answer is I get to make amazing games that are enjoyed by, you know, tens of millions of people around the world. D&D has been around for 44 years, entertaining people since, 1974. Dungeons & Dragons came out when I was in college in 1993. We're celebrating our 25th anniversary. And it's just fun to be able to bring people together around kitchen tables and gaming stores and computers and phones all around the world.
So, Chris, you've been the CEO for just about 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And I should point out, if people want to read deeper on Chris's experience at Wizards of the Coast and his past, Kurt Schlosser, one of our GeekWire reporters, wrote a great profile of you this past week and some interesting stories about the resurgence of D&D. But you have your own personal history with many of the games that Wizards of the Coast makes. Like, how did you originally start playing these games?
So I was introduced to Dungeons and Dragons when I was about 9 or 10 years old by my best friend's big brother. He was our dungeon master, and he got me into D&D. And before that, you know, I'd never really read, I'd never really story told, and it opened up this amazing new world to me. And the rest is history.
What was your first character?
Oh, gosh. When I was 9, probably not very sophisticated. My go-to character is a fighter thief.
That's awesome. So how many D&D fans do we have here in the audience in Renton? Let's hear a round of applause here for people who are into D&D. Nice. Yes. There, that's it. That's him. And how about Magic the Gathering? Magic the Gathering? Yes. Yes. That's great. So for people who aren't familiar with the games, Chris, how do you explain the overall appeal, and how do you get it across to somebody what's so magical, if you will, about these games?
Yeah. Well, with each game is different. They're both anchored in deeply social play. D&D is all about storytelling. It's all about kind of like that that native urge we have to tell stories and to explore worlds and journeys together. That's kind of the core of the game. Magic is more of a competitive or cooperative experience, and you're able to really play this this deep strategy game where you're able to create your own deck, and it's kind of like 3D chess where you're able to bring your own unique pieces to the board. And each are really fun. They each allow you to bond with other people. As I said, Magic's played by 10 million people. D&D, I think the last count was 12 million actively play. And it's all about just kind of making friends and having fun.
So you did recently, though, release a product that lets you kind of play by yourself with a computer, essentially, Magic the Gathering Arena, yeah. which is kind of a successor to Magic the Gathering Online, a little bit more basic way to play Magic Online. So what did you want to accomplish with Magic Arena that was different, say, from previous versions or from playing in person?
Sure. So Arena is our new digital version of Magic. It's for the PC, and it just launched in open beta about a month ago. And it basically allows you to play over 1,200 cards, all of the cards in the format called Standard in Magic, and you're able to play it with millions of people around the world instantaneously. And basically what we're trying to do with Arena is a couple things. For the newer player, we're trying to make the entry point into Magic super duper simple. Arena's free to play. You get a ton of cards when you first start to play, and you're able to be paired against, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of people when you play who have a similar skill level or a similar kind of deck as you. So you're really matched pretty evenly, and it's got a great tutorial system to help you teach the game. And then for the more competitive or experienced player, Arena is going to really anchor our efforts in streaming and esports, which are a huge driver of games today. You know, I think just in the first month that Arena was out, Magic was the 10th biggest game on Twitch and YouTube, and I think in terms of number of viewers, and the 6th biggest game in terms of viewership, which is a huge leap for the game, and we only see that growing over time.
So, Chris, one of the things we're really big into at GeekWire is learning leadership lessons from the people that we talk to, and oftentimes people draw from their work or from their life experiences or from the games they play to talk about their leadership lessons. I'm curious, are there any tactics or strategies from D&D or Magic the Gathering that you can apply to your role as Wizards of the Coast president?
Oh, one of the things that people make fun of me about at work is one of the core ways we think about strategies or developing our games or developing our properties is we talk about it in terms of castles and boats. And castles are like these big IPs that you have that have kind of like a moat around them. And, you know, they're important aspects of our business, but they tend to be kind of more solidified. And boats are these things that we can kind of send off and explore kind of new realms or new ideas. So that's kind of a fantasy metaphor that we use from the games. I actually lost a bet and I had to name myself in Arena Bodie McCastleface for the whole team. But I also think, like, you know, the other core thing that you've learned from our games is the power of storytelling in explaining things and in bringing strategies and concepts to life.
I know that one of the boats that you're exploring and sort of sending off to see if it comes back with anything interesting is this whole idea of augmented reality, AR. And I know this is very early. You're just sort of looking at it in a sort of an exploratory phase, things like the Microsoft HoloLens and the Magic Leap, where you would wear goggles and it would have an impact on the tabletop in front of you. Because at its heart, for example, Dungeons and Dragons is a tabletop game, even though you're getting into more digital areas. Where do you draw the line, though? Because this is a fundamental question for all these technologies. Where does your imagination as the player stop? Where should it be appropriate for it to stop? And where should technology take over? And how do you think about that?
Well, I think with AR, like some of the new technologies are pretty sophisticated. Certainly Magic Leap and HoloLens are amazing pieces of technology. They're still pretty early, and they aren't necessarily ready for broad-scale consumer adoption yet. But then you also have like phone platforms, like what iOS does and what Android is doing, that are maybe not as sophisticated because they don't have all the bells and whistles and sensors, et cetera, associated with them, but each kind of have their roles. You know, if you're thinking about high end and what we're thinking about in terms of exploring there, just imagine being able to play a game of Magic with your cards. And as you play a card, those cards kind of come to life, similar to like what they might do on Arena, where you have animations that kind of blow up with the cards, or the AI is able to detect when you have two cards come together, they have some kind of little fight. And it just kind of brings the fantasy to life or gives a nudge for the fantasy for you. You know, on a simpler technology, like just using your phone, you know, I think we're really interested in the whole concept of being able to dungeon crawl or adventure in real life. So being able to walk around and someone being a dungeon master in your neighborhood who leaves little adventures for you, and you can see portals into those adventures through your phone and be able to experience those. You know, all these are just kind of drawing table ideas that we're experimenting with, but we see a lot of interesting potential to expand immersion and to bring more people in.
So in the same vein, you have, as you're mentioning, millions of fans around the world who feel very strongly about the games and are passionate about the games. And even when you try and do something like Arena, there's a bit of a resistance because you're changing something that people love deeply or adding something to it that's kind of new. So I'm curious how you balance paying tribute to that and being loyal to kind of the core of the game and trying to still evolve and grow it and keep it kind of not stagnant, but moving.
Yeah, I mean, certainly when you a company that's responsible for games that are measured in decades of longevity, and when you think about the player bases for those games where, you know, a lot of free-to-play games measure like their loyalty for the game in days. We measure our loyalty to our games in years. You have to take the people who play the game very, very seriously and what their expectations for that game. But I think one of the concepts that we have is, you know, we constantly want to expand the notion and the boundaries of what those games are. So while you try to respect what people who've been playing the game for a long time think and expect of the game, you always try to experiment with kind of that boats mentality about new ways that you can bring new people into the game. And that's either through new game expressions, it might be through new entertainment expressions, whether those are books or things that we might do online, or through more traditional kind of entertainment mediums. And you just kind of balance the approach and make sure that the people who've been here for a long time have their kind of meat and potatoes experience, and the people that you want to bring in tomorrow, you're kind of expanding, you're taking a nod to what the meat and potatoes experience are, but you're maybe offering them maybe a slightly different entree or a different appetizer.
So we're here in Renton, Washington this week, and that's why we're here at the Southport Complex. And you are really remarkable as Wizards of the Coast for being a sizable technology company here.
Yeah.
And even though, obviously, you're involved in tabletop games, as you're saying, I mean, this is a technology venture in a lot of ways. Talk about what it's like to run a company in Renton. Do you ever have to basically pay people more to come here, pay people less because it's so awesome? Like, where are you in terms of recruiting, and how does Renton fit into your picture and your culture as a company?
Well, I think we're fortunate in that, you know, I've never gone to a game development studio, whether it was in this iteration of my career or in previous jobs, where there hasn't been a active Magic club or an active like Dungeons and Dragons club. It's just common inside of games, and it's even common inside of a lot of technology companies, as your article about a bunch of CEOs who kind of play D&D show. So we have a great fortune of having people who've been playing our games for a long time and have a lot of passion for them. I think Renton is an easy place for people to get to. A lot of our employees live in West Seattle. They live in Bellevue, or they live in kind of the Issaquah corridor. And that's like an easy 20, 25 minute commute. And then the other nice thing about Renton is it's really kind of closer to kind of like more of the exurbs of Seattle. So you can go out to Maple Valley, or you can go to closer to Tacoma, and your money can stretch farther. And that tends to be a benefit for people who are either already in Seattle or moving into Seattle from another part of the country, which maybe has a lower cost of living.
I want to go back and touch on a technology that's come up a couple times now, live streaming. So live streaming for both Magic and D&D has really, really taken off.
Yeah.
And the thing that's interesting about it, people may be surprised about it, is that it's players, it's fans. It's not like, you know, necessarily Wizards of the Coast employees are out there running these live streams. So tell me about how that has been for Wizards to kind of launch into that arena and how it's part of the business now.
Well, I think it's been a huge catalyst for our business. You know, D&D 5th edition came out about 4 years ago. And, you know, we're on trajectory for our fourth year of good size double-digit growth, like, you know, in excess of 30% growth per year for D&D. And I think part of that is 5th edition is just a great product. 5th edition is the latest version of D&D in the rule set. It's kind of guidelines focused. It really helps with open-ended problem solving and storytelling. But I think streaming has been a huge kind of tailwind for us. I think in the last year, we've had 7,500 different people who stream D&D. And, you know, there's hundreds of millions of minutes of viewing time. I think 9 million or 10 million people watch D&D in a given year, which is amazing because it's, you know, it's famous actors. It's famous voice actors. It's just, you know, Joe and Jane Schmo down the street just kind of having fun and playing the game. And, you know, for the first time ever, we do surveys of gamers and we kind of find out how did you learn about the game and how did you get into it. In 2018, for the first time ever, watching a stream and learning about the game from a stream eclipsed learning about the game directly from a friend. And it just shows the power of platforms like YouTube and Twitch, and we've really been leaning into that.
It's funny because Claire wrote about this over the weekend, and I was reading her story, and I was like, wait a second. So they turn on a camera, and they point it at the table or the people, and so Claire had to explain it to me, basically.
Yes, yeah. Normally you look at the people, which is the most interesting part. Yeah. So the reason I was writing about that this weekend is I was at a panel of D&D designers at Geek Girl Con in Seattle, and they were talking about kind of the changing face or the changing perception of D&D and how traditionally it was seen as kind of ultra nerdy and something that was very much for boys and men, and that was the perception it had, even if that wasn't kind of the player base that it had. But both the player base and the perception has changed dramatically. And you talked about this earlier, reaching out to different communities, whatever that looks like, whether it's younger people or people who aren't quite as nerdy or people who are of different demographics, women, ethnic minorities, etc. And streaming has been a big part of that, from what they were saying, at least. So I'm curious, in what other ways are you kind of working on that perception and changing those kind of stereotypes and saying these games are for anybody who wants to play them?
Well, I think, you know, as I mentioned, kind of like that clubhouse mentality that many games have, like we try to really knock the doors out of that clubhouse and really have a big tent, invite people in. And I think the single most important way we can do that is making sure that anyone can see themselves in the game and, you know, really showcasing, you know, powerful male heroes, powerful female heroes, people with different outlooks on life and different orientations, whatever that orientation may be, and making sure no matter what color, creed, stripe, or flavor you are, you can see yourself in the game and be able to play that game. That's important to us in D&D. That's important to us in Magic, and something I think we've been really leaning into over time, and I think it helps with the game.
So what would be your advice to somebody like me who was always a little bit intimidated by the kids in school when I was going to elementary school who were doing this thing called D&D? And I almost was kind of turned off just because it seemed so mysterious in this world that I was kind of like an alien world that I didn't want to jump into. What would be your advice to somebody now like me, you know, who's an adult wanting to get into it, seeing how cool it is? Is there a first step that you would suggest other than just sitting down with friends and playing a game?
Oh, sure. There's a lot of first steps I think you could take. I think streaming is one of the best avenues that you can go watch. You can go on to Twitch and see dozens of different streams at any given time. And, you know, if you find a good stream, like Dice Camera Action or Acquisitions Incorporated, it's just like watching great improv. It's funny, people play off of each other, and it inspires you about how you could bring a group of people together and be that witty and that charismatic together. If that's maybe a little bit too big of a gap for you because you're just kind of shy, we also have other games that kind of help onboard you into the game. So like we have board games that kind of have a ready-made character for you, and the board game actually acts as a dungeon master. And then we have a new card game coming out that's kind of like Exploding Kittens meets Dungeons and Dragons, called Dungeon Mayhem. And it's just a really simple game where you take the role of a kind of like a classic character, like a rogue or a paladin or a fighter or a wizard, and you battle each other across the table. And my wife wasn't a big D&D or fantasy fan growing up, and my daughter definitely is not a fantasy fan. And we've gotten them into my son and I have gotten them into Dungeon Mayhem, and that's kind of like their entry point into the franchise.
You've got the coolest job ever. I mean, to grow up as a D&D fan and, you know, have this history with the game. Did you ever think you would be running the company that makes these iconic franchises?
No. I dreamt that would have been super cool. Well, let me not geek out too much.
Please, let's put come it this on. Way. You're on the GeekWire podcast.
Yeah, let me put it this way. If I was able to go back in time and have a conversation with my 10-year-old self, I think my 10-year-old self would approve. He'd be really happy with how things worked out. And it's great because, you know, like when I started playing D&D, I'd never read a book. I'd never written anything creatively. You know, I was just kind of a kid who was diagnosed as hyperactive by my doctor at the time and told not to drink caffeine, which was hard as a 10-year-old in Cincinnati, Ohio. You know, when I discovered D&D, it really just kind of like lit a creative flame inside of me. And I started reading. I read the Lord of the Rings series. I read the Shannara series. I started writing for the first time. I'd start making my own games. You know, it kind of just kind of pointed me into a new direction that I think has made me a much more successful and complete person as a result of that. And when I told people about that at work, I can't tell you how many people said, you know, that happened to me at the exact same age, at the exact same time. And it's just such an honor to be able to kind of share something that had such a positive impact on you, not just bringing smiles to your face, but helping you complete yourself as a person. And that's what really gets me going when I'm, you know, when I wake up in the morning and get to go to work.
Chris Cox is the president of Wizards of the Coast, the maker of Dungeons & Dragons and Magic the Gathering. Chris, thank you so much for being on the GeekWire podcast.
Todd and Claire, thank you.
Absolutely. All right. Just real fast.
Oh, sure.
So we will be right back on GeekWire with a very special surprise guest. Seahawks wide receiver Doug Baldwin will be joining us next. You're going to want to stick around for that. That's coming up next on The Week in Geek. You're listening to GeekWire. Doug Baldwin is in his eighth year as an NFL wide receiver. He's a two-time Pro Bowl selection and helped the Seahawks win a Super Bowl in 2013. The self-proclaimed nerd graduated from Stanford with degrees in science and technology and society. In 2016, he teamed up with the city of Renton and the Renton School District to help build the Family First Community Center. Seahawks wide receiver Doug Baldwin, welcome to the GeekWire podcast.
Thank you for having me.
All right, we are here at Southport in Renton, and GeekWire reporter Taylor Soper is joining us. Taylor, you want to take it away with the first question?
Sure, thank you. Thanks, Doug, for being here. I know you're a busy guy. You've got a busy job.
Just got out of the shower.
You are a short drive away here at the VMAC for the Seahawks practice. Big game this weekend, Chargers. But I want to kind of go in the past a little bit. 2011, you've just arrived in Seattle, specifically here in Renton. And teriyaki. You and Sherman went to a teriyaki joint here. Tell us about that and how that kind of started your experience here in Renton.
Yeah, so those who have been around Renton for a very long time, they know of Mama's Teriyaki. And it was just this little, I hope she doesn't get mad at me, it's this little hole-in-wall place. You know, she made it just a very vibrant, very welcoming place to come and just enjoy a meal. And so, yeah, of course, you know, Sherman and I being in the area, we wanted to find our little joint where we could go and relax and be ourselves. And that was it. And what we noticed was there was always people coming. There was police officers coming, students coming. And it just felt like this was like a hub of the community. But we also noticed that the kids they really didn't have anything else. And so, as he mentioned earlier, it was one of the things, one of my passions was to bring something and activities to the area so kids can enjoy it. But Mama's Teriyaki definitely is the spot.
Taylor, did you go there during your week?
I didn't know. Actually, I think, is it still
you
around?
Out. It's not anymore. Oh. Unfortunately, she She's doing successful in business right now because she makes great teriyaki. She moved to Faux Shizzle. I don't know if you guys heard of Faux Shizzle in Renton. But then she got too big for that property, so now she's in UW, at UW. So she's moving on up.
But started right here.
Yeah.
So Doug, many people may not know that the Seahawks do have their practice facility here, the VMAC, as it's known.
The Renton Seahawks.
Exactly. So you talked a little bit about your roots, after arriving here in this community, but I'd be curious to know, like, what's it like to be in Renton? How would you describe it to somebody who's never been here before?
Well, for me personally, right? So I came from Pensacola, Florida. And if you know anything about Pensacola, Florida, you know it's not diverse. And it's very old school, if you will. Listen, I'm not going to go there. But I was fortunate and blessed enough to come out to the West Coast. I went to college in California, a phenomenal experience, a culture shock for me. And then it felt like a natural transition when I came here to Renton. The community, just the people, the vibe was just very warm. And obviously we know it's a very progressive area. And that was very similar to what I felt in California. And the diversity. I can't speak enough about the diversity. It was just, not only just in ethnicities, but diversity of thought, diversity of just everything. The collective was so diverse. I keep saying diversity, but it meant a lot to me. And so that's why it was so important to me to be a part of it. And so the people who know it, people who haven't experienced it yet, I would say this, the opportunities just to be a more well-rounded human being is right here in Renton.
So in 2016, you teamed up with the city and the school district to help start the Family First Community Center. Tell us about that. I mean, you're a busy guy. You've got a lot of things going on, not just on the field, but I know you're an investor in Vices, which just announced actually Aaron Rodgers as another investor today. But why put your time and your energy and your money? I mean, you're putting up millions of dollars for this community center. Where does that come from? And maybe from some of your childhood, too, that kind of importance of having something like that.
Yeah, so my response to you and typically to people who ask me, why do you do these things? My response is typically, well, why not? I think it's very easy to kind of categorize athletes and entertainers into this one category and say, oh, they're philanthropists or they're doing things for the community, when players, athletes, entertainers, they've always been doing things for the community. It's just now it's been more broadcast, right? The technology and social media, you hear about it more often. But for me personally, it's always been about, and how I was raised, was about serving those around you and being a part of a community for the greater good of that community. And so it's a no-brainer for me. When people ask me, why do you want to do this? It's, I'm a part of something. I'm a part of a human collective, and I want to be a part of it that's going in a progressive manner and doing things in a positive way. So that's why I do it.
Taylor mentioned Vices, which is the high-tech football helmet company based here in Seattle, spun out of the University of Washington. You're an investor.
Yes.
And
just announced the Vices One youth helmet. So if you need a youth helmet,
That's right. Yeah. It just went generally available today. It's roughly $500 helmet that you can buy for youth. But do you also wear a Vices helmet on the field?
On the field.
First, I want to talk about technology broadly, but first I want to ask, tell us what that helmet has done for you in terms of your confidence about your safety.
Well, you just said it. It definitely has brought me more confidence. And, it's funny. It's hard for me to talk about this because I am a football player, right? And the NFL and the broader spectrum doesn't want NFL players talking about the dangers and the risks and the inherent risks that come with playing football. And, I've been fortunate enough to not have as many injuries as some others have, specifically brain injuries. And it's just one of those things. You get to a point when you start to realize what's important in life, what you value, what you prioritize. And I want to live a very long and healthy life for my future children that aren't born yet. I want to create memories with them and remember them and be cognitively aware of everything that's going on around me and just being present with my children. And so one of the factors that plays into that is being healthy on the football field, not with just, the general body, but also with my brain. And, Vices was a no-brainer, no pun intended.
What about technology overall? Are there things that have changed even in the past 2-3 years? We had you at the GeekWire Sports Tech Summit a couple years ago, and you talked a little bit about this, but I know things are evolving quickly. Is there any one or two things or anything that stands out for you that's changed the game or your preparation or recovery from the game?
I mean, there's always technology being pitched to us, as you can imagine. We get a number of things to the facility, just, hey, try this. You know, it's for free. Try it, see what it, you know, and we get a lot of stuff. And genuinely, I would say that nothing beats just a good night's rest, right? A good a good day off with some solid food and some rest and relaxation. I think that nothing beats that. So, you know, we can throw a whole bunch of technology at it, at problems that you see athletes having, but, you know, nothing's going to beat time off from actually doing what we do.
So I got to ask you, apart from the score, is there any one number that you look at right after a game that you use to either evaluate your performance or the team's performance? What are the most important numbers you look at when you look at the stat sheets after a game?
So individually, I'll start there first. I look, as a receiver, I look at my targets to catch ratio. So, you know, we'll go through the course of a game and the quarterback may throw me 4 or 5 passes. I want to make sure that I'm catching 4 or 5 of those targets. And so that for me, just because in Seattle, we don't throw the ball that often. We never have, unfortunately. So I haven't been really able to compare myself to the greater collective of receivers in the NFL just by gaudy numbers. I haven't been able to do that. So the way that I can compare myself to other individual receivers is by how many times the ball's thrown to them, how many times they catch it. And to me, if you're a receiver and the quarterback throws you the ball and you catch it more times than the other people do, then you might be a good receiver. So, and, you know, not to boost my own ego, but nobody's come close. So, As a team, as a whole, I think, you know, it might sound counterintuitive for a receiver to say this, but I always look at the run attempts, the rush attempts. And so the more we run the ball, means that we're controlling the clock, meaning that the opposing offense is not on the field, so they can't score points, and then also our third down conversion rate. So if we're converting on third down, that means we're keeping the ball longer than the opposing offense, and typically we're scoring points. So if we can do that on a regular basis, then I think that's, you know, that typically tells us how well we really did in that game.
That's great. That was a very selfless one on the run, the run stat. I mean, that's great.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time with it.
So big picture, you know, we cover a lot of startups on GeekWire, and it always strikes me when I start to follow the Seahawks again over the off season and think about the next season and read all the coverage, that, you know, a lot of times the challenges you're facing as a team are just natural things that startups would face as well. New people coming in, different teammates to play with. Are there any lessons that you can impart to the startup community, the tech companies out there, about what you do, what Pete Carroll does, what Russell Wilson does, that basically keep people on the same page amidst all of that sort of turmoil, both internally and externally?
You know, it's funny. I get this question a lot.
Oh, no. Really?
I
thought that was so original.
And the honest truth is we don't know what we're doing. We don't know what we're doing. Let's be honest. If we really did know what we were doing, then there would be a lot more successful startups, football teams, sports teams out there, right? Because you would just paste the formula. But the truth of the matter is you're dealing with individuals on every level. You're dealing with human beings who are different on every level. And you have to approach it as such. You know, I do a lot in terms of my passion is social justice right now. And I know it's a big word and it's thrown out there all the time. But really what it comes down to me, when we start attacking these social problems and social issues, it's more that you have to attack these issues from an empathic place. You have to look at the individuals. You have to look at human beings. You have to humanize these issues. And I think it's the same thing for startups, for teams, for organizations, anybody. When you look at a collective group of people, you have to humanize the problems or the solutions you're trying to bring about. But I will say this, this may seem weird coming from a 30-year-old thinking that he may know it all, but I will say this. There is an unconscious conspiracy in every organization, I believe, in my personal opinion. There's an unconscious conspiracy to keep the status quo the status quo. And I believe that that is the number one factor that prevents good people or good organizations from becoming great or from excelling to the next plateau. Sometimes I believe you have to, even if it's good, you have to blow it up, because if you want to become great, you're always changing, you're always progressing, and you can't progress, you can't change if you stay stagnant, if you're too afraid to go out on the limb. And so, you know, take that for what you will. I think just human beings in general should never be afraid to risk, because when you risk, you are growing, and I don't want to stay stagnant.
You're starting to sound a little bit like a startup founder or startup CEO.
Starting a family.
Yeah, as we talk about family and kids that you might have and life after football, I mean, what does that look like for you? I know social justice is a passion for you, and building a community center here in Renton. I mean, are you thinking about this? Like, what is that? What does Doug Baldwin after the NFL look like?
Oh, hopefully, my number one obviously is taking care of my family. Right, that's always going to be my priority. That's what my values are set on, is my family. Absolutely think about it every day, what I want to put myself into after football's done. I think I'll probably take a year off, do nothing, disappear from the public eye, just to kind of recalibrate who I am as a human being, and really reassess my values as a man. And then we'll see what happens. I really hope that I can get away from the label and the logo of Doug Baldwin, the football player, and people can start looking at me as Doug Baldwin, the human, because ultimately I think that, you know, that's how you can really create change and effectuate change in the world, when people start looking at individuals as human beings. So I'm hoping that is the direction that I go in afterwards, after I'm done with football.
Very good.
So to that point, what role do athletes have to play as you're thinking about these social issues? And I realize you want to sort of get beyond Doug Baldwin, the NFL player, but is there a chance to use that platform in your post NFL career?
Absolutely.
And how could you do that?
I don't know yet. That's the conundrum I'm in, because I want to get away from this football persona, but it also has presented me an opportunity and a platform to do the things that I want to do. I will say that I feel like if there's this parable, it's called the Parable of Talents, and some of you may know it. And I think that I've been blessed with a number of talents, and I don't want those to go to waste. I don't want to bury them and not, you know, risk them to create more. So I'm willing to do that. And I think that, again, like I said earlier, being a human being, first and foremost, will help me do that.
I got to ask you, talk about your outlook on the rest of the season here. I know you've got the Chargers coming up here.
Didn't I just say? I'm joking. Not yet. My outlook on the season, you know, it started off very rough, both as a team and personally. But I think what I'm most excited about is that this team is filled with young men that are really trying to find themselves in the world. Right, they're trying to experience something that they've never experienced before, and they're enjoying it. They're having fun. It's really, if you go in our locker room after a win, it's really like we're having a party, you know. And I'm the second oldest guy on the team, so I'm kind of lost. But you know, it's really exciting to see these guys come alive, because it's hard. You know, this sport is hard. It takes a toll on you physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally. It takes a lot out of you, and you want to see people enjoying it while they're in the process of it. And for me, looking forward, I think that this team is just, we've kind of found our identity as men, and the sky's the limit for us. I wouldn't even say that. The sky's not the limit. We can go even further than that. But again, it's the process, and I'm so excited about it, because these young guys are great men first and foremost, but obviously they're great football players as well.
And you mentioned earlier about not knowing what you're doing as a team, but something where you do know what you're doing is these post-touchdown celebrations, which I know you're a part of. Tell us about that. Yes. There's been, if you've seen the movie Drumline, or there was a recent one with like a pitcher and a batter. And
Nolan
a,
Ryan.
Nolan Ryan, exactly. So do you get prepared? Do you practice those?
We do. We do. you know, and our coaches are probably annoyed with us at this point, but we do spend a lot of time practicing our touchdown celebrations. I think, you know, just in general, you know, the atmosphere that we try to create as a team, but mainly as a receiving group as well, we try to have fun. You know, again, like I said, the job we do is hard. Like, I was there at 6 o'clock and I didn't leave until 6 o'clock, you know, and it's hard, and we want to have fun. And so when we're on the football field, if we get to celebrate a touchdown as a unit, oh, we're going to do that. And we're going to spend some extra time making sure it's perfect, just like the Nolan Ryan pitch.
I got to say, yeah, that was great. And was it Tyler Lockett who threw the pitch?
He did throw the pitch.
Yeah,
it was perfect, wasn't it?
It was perfect. Talk about a high-pressure situation. Because if he had missed the knockdown pitch, I mean, that would have been humiliating.
It would have messed up the whole celebration.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's why he's in that situation.
Oh, is he? Yeah, the ice water in his veins. Great pitcher.
I wouldn't say that, but yeah.
So, Doug, we're here in Renton. We're at Southport. We're just a short distance away from the VMAC where you spend a lot of your time. Is there anything we have not yet talked about that you would want to get across to this audience in the context of Renton, your career, and anything that we haven't talked to you about yet that you want to leave people with?
No, these people don't want to hear about me.
Oh, come on. Look at them. They're wrapped.
You do? Can I ask questions? Can I ask them to ask questions?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, we have a couple.
Just yell them out.
And we can repeat them here. Yeah, so more, explain this one, Doug. So more on your view on the talents. So
okay.
Explain
so
that.
The parable of the talents is that there was these three men. They were given these gifts, these talents. One man was given one man was given three, one man was given five. The man with the one, he buried it, and he wanted to protect it. So when the man who gave him the talents came back, he was like, I didn't lose the talent that you gave me. The man with three talents, he saved some of them and invested some of them and got one back. The man with five talents, he invested all of it and got 10 talents back. And so when the man who gave them the talents came to them and said, what did you do with the talents I gave you? They all explained what happened. And so the man with five talents at the beginning, who came back and now has 10 talents, has 10 gifts to give back, that's the man that I want to be. That's the man that I want to teach my kids to be, or the people I want to teach my kids to be, and that's the way I want to be for my children and for my wife. And so it's a scary thing, right? Because we've been given these gifts. We've been given this opportunity to feel safe and comfortable and stay in our bubble and our circle. And when you really are asking yourself to invest in something greater than yourself, that means going outside of your bubble, going outside of your comfort zone, and sometimes not feeling safe. And I think that's the area where God can really work. Instead of us making ourselves God. Thank you.
Well, this is great. Doug Baldwin, thank you very much for being here.
You want to ask one question?
Oh, okay, go ahead, sorry. So the question is, on the day you die, what do you want to be remembered for?
I want to be remembered for being the best husband to my wife and the best father to my children, right? All this other stuff doesn't matter. No matter how many touchdowns I catch, no matter how many Super Bowls we win, don't get me wrong, I want to win. But at the end of the day, when you're on your deathbed, and, you know, I've thought about this a lot, the only people that I want around me are the people that I love and that love me, right? Like, I don't care, but don't bring me the Super Bowl trophy, you know? Don't bring me a football. Bring me my family, because that's really, in this life, that's all that matters. And so when I'm on my deathbed, I hope they know that I love them with everything that I've had.
Okay, we got a question over here.
Do you see yourself staying in Washington after you retire?
Absolutely.
So the question.
Done deal.
For people who may not have heard that, the question is, do you see yourself staying in Washington after your career? And specifically, there was a follow-up embedded very quickly afterward. Are you going to stay in Renton?
I will be working in Renton in some capacity. I don't know if I'll be actually living in Renton, but I will be for sure working in Renton in some capacity.
That's right. Another one here. Favorite game off day recovery meal?
Oh, man.
Good questions.
Meal? Spaghetti. My mom used to make spaghetti when I was younger, and it actually wasn't really that good. Don't tell my
don't
mom
tell
that.
Yeah.
No, it was pretty decent. It was decent. But it gave me this feeling of safety, right? And so when I'm on my off days, I like to get some spaghetti. And my wife makes a delicious spaghetti. So,
question over here? Oh, boy.
Oh.
Yeah, what is Southport, which is the complex we're in that's underwritten our GeekWire On the Road series? What does it mean to you, Doug?
That wasn't a planted question. Oh, man. Okay. All right. Kip, don't get mad at me for this. I got to be honest, okay? When I look at Southport and what's coming to life here, I look at this as an opportunity with its challenges, right? When you haven't a beautiful building like this come up, it raises the cost of living in the area, right? And truth be told, there's some people in this area who won't be able to afford that, right? And I know they probably don't want to hear that, but that is the truth. And I'm not, if my value is to be honest, I have to be honest. But I will say this, the people that I've worked with here, and they know that I've worked with them, I've partnered with them. The reason why I've partnered with them is because I know that they have that vision, right? I know that their moral compass is focused on the right things, and their thought process and their consideration for the community that they're that they've been blessed to be a part of, they don't take that lightly. And so I think that this area has a great opportunity to do things differently and to really humanize the problems that we see in neighboring cities and make things better for all. And so that is my honest opinion.
Well, it's a perfect segue to what we're going to be talking about next in our next segment, because Taylor Soper next to you has been spending the week here as a journalist looking at the positives and the negatives and the challenges and the opportunities. And what you're saying is very much what we've been reporting all week. You know, there are many positive things happening here, but one of the challenges they're going to face is avoiding some of the pitfalls of the growth of
exactly.
the tech sector if it does come. And we see it firsthand in Seattle and Fremont and all the places where we are there. So great point, and that's why we're here, is to be candid. And we are very grateful to Southport for bringing us here, but at the same time, we are here to do a journalism project. So that's very much in line with what we're doing here. So thank you, Doug. Doug Baldwin, wide receiver for the Seattle Seahawks. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Don't we have to fish? If we're sitting here in this arrangement, I think there are two words that I have to say to conclude that segment, right? Are you ready? Go Hawks! Thanks, Doug. Okay, we have been talking with Doug Baldwin, and we will be right back with our takeaways from our GeekWire On the Road project in Renton, Washington. That's coming up next on The Week in Geek. Welcome back. You are listening to GeekWire. We are coming to you on location from Southport here in Renton, Washington. All right. This is the culmination of our GeekWire On the Road project. And a big thanks to Southport for underwriting our visit here, making it possible this week. Taylor Soper, GeekWire reporter. Let's bring you in now. It's great to have you here.
Good to be here. Renton.
So Taylor, you've been here the entire week. And for people who haven't been following this project, the idea really has been to assess Renton's future, look at where it is today and say, what could it become and how could it be somewhat emblematic of the way many communities could grow in a constructive way in the future? Let's talk about your key takeaways, Taylor. Run us through some of the top things that you're really thinking about after spending a full week here.
Yeah, I love these projects. And one question I like to ask myself is, you know, would I live here? Would I like to live here? And the answer is yes, I would like to, you know, maybe one time live in Renton.
Don't qualify with a maybe. Come on.
I'm up in Seattle now, and so it's been interesting to kind of compare and contrast Seattle, super busy metropolitan area, with Renton. And I've really actually enjoyed Renton. It's the people are nice, they're grounded, they're easy to talk to, which is can be hard to find in Seattle. It's got everything you need. Great food, great parks, beautiful setting. And so there's a lot to love about Renton, and I have no complaints, really. So what,
no complaints. No, no. So,
so I
no,
didn't actually drive in and out of Renton while I've been here. So I know traffic's a big issue here with a lot of residents. But overall, I mean, especially if you're someone that's looking to get out of your townhouse and maybe move in with your family in a bigger house, Renton might be that spot. I've interviewed several people, Amazonians specifically, and some people with Starbucks who did make that exact move where they moved from Seattle down to Renton to find cheaper housing, really. So
those are some of the upsides. Let's talk about what I know is really the most important Taylor Soper criteria when going into any location. We found this out in Pittsburgh with our HQ2 project. I know you went around to startup weeks, and which communities have you been to?
Phoenix, Dallas, Beijing.
Yeah, so this is you are becoming very experienced at going into a community, assessing its prospects for being a tech hub. And I know, Taylor, the top of your list is food. So highlights from Renton and its food
Surprisingly,
scene.
Renton has a good hop-in food scene. There's everything from Naan and Curry, which I was recommended numerous times to go to, and that place is super good. I heard Satya Nadella orders from there, Microsoft CEO. Bill Gates has liked it. It was awesome. Everything from that to...
Oh, you're not going to say it, are you? Are you really going to say it? Go ahead.
I was going to get there. Well, first I was going to say El Burrito Loco, which has $1 tacos on Tuesday and Wednesday, I found out. And I will say IKEA. I went there last night for dinner. And... $5 for meatballs and veggies and what I thought was kind of a nice setting to eat dinner, you know, in the nice IKEA. I mean, I enjoyed it and it was good on the wallet, and I think Renton's best kept dinner secret maybe. But for real, like, and there's not only old places, but like local 907 downtown's a new brewery, and there's Ford Generals and the Brewmaster's Tap Room. So I kind of hopped around a little bit, and a lot of these places are just a year or 2 years old. And so it's really interesting to kind of see the genesis of that. And maybe 5 years from now, there'll be 10 or 20 of those. So it's exciting. There's a good energy here.
Yeah, so obviously IKEA is there, and people know Renton for the IKEA or the fries, depending on sort of what stage of life you're in or your level of geekiness. We talked a little bit about accessibility. Were you able to walk around to different places that you wanted to go? Was that even a possibility, or did you find yourself getting in a car?
I did find myself getting in the car for the most part. Now, if I was maybe staying in downtown, that might have been different, but we heard from Chris from Wizards of the Coast earlier talking about his workers and just tech workers in general kind of want to be able to walk. And, you know, Renton is pretty big. You know, there's the Landing, we're here at Southport, and then there's downtown, and it's a little bit difficult to walk. I mean, it's you can do it if you want, but it's nothing like maybe South Lake Union is today, where you can kind of just walk everywhere and not have to even think about getting in the car. So it'd be nice if there was maybe a streetcar or some kind of easier way that you can always use Uber or Lyft, I guess. But it is a little bit spread out, but as you drive around, you can see the empty lots or the buildings, and you know, can there be another Landing or another Wizards of the Coast building, or say a big tech company comes right here at Southport? It can get kind of interesting when you start to fill in those gaps.
On the subject of transportation, one thing that we wrote about today was plans for a new water taxi, which would actually dock essentially right out the window here and go from Renton to Seattle. They're planning to have that ready to go in 2020, so within a couple of years, basically. Would that make a difference for you as somebody who is obviously planning to move to Renton?
That could be a game changer. You know, it depends on how long it takes, the price. I was just in San Francisco a few weekends ago and was taking the ferry there. It was a little bit expensive, but very convenient, especially as I talked to some of our GeekWire colleagues who came down here from Fremont. You know, it's not a 20-minute drive in rush hour. It's 40 or an hour or longer than that. And that can change your schedule and change how you plan your day. So the water taxi could be super interesting, and it sounds like they're making headway on that.
So one thing that we can sort of talk about behind the scenes at GeekWire, when we go into a community, whether it's Pittsburgh or Dallas or anywhere else, we really look for the anchor startups. And we struggled, actually, beyond Some of the companies like Wizards of the Coast, we like actually struggled to find a company to feature in our startup spotlight feature.
Yeah, it was hard.
It was hard. So I think that speaks to the fact that even though there is some momentum here, they've got to get not just the medium-sized tech companies, which, you know, they have to some extent, but startups as well. Anything that you could see changing here? Does it come down to that infrastructure to attract those kinds of startups?
Well, what Renton has going for it is, you know, cheaper office rent. It is the most expensive in South King County, but it's considerably cheaper than Seattle or Bellevue. So, but, you know, if you think about it from a founder's perspective, is why would you start a company in Renton? Well, what I just mentioned, the cost, but do your employees want to live here is the big question. I mean, after a week, I would live here, but I do miss Seattle, and I miss the things to do there. Now, if there was a water taxi going back and forth many times a day, that changes things. But Renton's just – maybe it's not cool enough yet. I don't know. You know, it's getting there. But just from a perspective of, like, the 22-year-old grad from UW who's, like, trying to pick where he wants to work, he or she is probably going to pick Seattle over Renton.
Cap Hill.
I know I've been thinking about it, and sometimes I hear people say, is Renton the next Bellevue or is Renton the next – Redmond, and I could see that happening, but with its own culture and own vibe. It's like Renton's cooler than Bellevue or Redmond, that's for sure.
Really? That's a big statement. Yes.
I think it is. I mean, and you've heard, I think Doug was saying diversity. It is really diverse here. It's the eighth most diverse school district in the nation, and not just with ethnicities, but just people, different jobs. There's longtime locals. There's new people here. So it's a really cool mix of people, and the longtime locals are pretty accepting of the change, with maybe a few exceptions of just like making sure leaders here are thinking about the downsides of growth. But it's kind of refreshing almost coming from Seattle.
Yeah. We're going to wrap it up with that. Taylor Soper, any final thoughts on Renton? Are you going to be heading back down here just for the IKEA dinners?
I'm starting to kind of miss it. I was going to go back tonight, but the pool opens tomorrow morning, so I might have to stay for that. And I've got a ton more food spots actually on my list that I wanted to go to. So it's been really fun. My perspective of Renton has changed through my reporting, and hopefully you can read GeekWire and see some of the stories, not just of myself, but my colleagues, and really kind of telling the story of what's going on now and what could happen. So we'll be keeping our eye on Renton and watching the growth and see how this community continues to get bigger and better.
Excellent. So just go to geekwire.com, look for the special coverage, GeekWire on the road from Renton. We are going to be doing this in other places around the region. I've got a few ideas for where we could go next that we're going to be talking about in the office next week. Until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
I'm Taylor Soper.
A big thanks to Claire McGrain and our guests, Doug Baldwin from the Seattle Seahawks and Chris Cox from Wizards of the Coast. And a big thanks to our audience here at Southport in Renton. Thanks for joining, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time on GeekWire.